Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernan. I created the space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between, without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Hello, I hope you're all well. I didn't get a chance to record an episode last week. My guest and I couldn't reschedule, so I'm not as flexible as I used to be when it comes to rescheduling episodes. I used to have loads of time in my hands in the evening, and I don't anymore. So if I can't reschedule one of our chats, which is very rare, then I just have to let it go and move on to the following week. So before we get stuck into this week's guest and I share a little bit about her story in the intro, I want to highlight something that has just been created by a group of really passionate, powerful, driven and committed Irish women, and that is the Births Right Alliance of Ireland. And they have just created this to try and bring about change in the maternity system. We all know it needs to happen. So I will tag their Instagram page and their website. They were part of the rally on Sunday, which I couldn't make. My back just won't allow me to do these things. But I was there in spirit, and obviously I'm behind them in anything that they do. Our midwives need our support. Now more than ever, it's at a critical point. So I just wanted to highlight what they're doing and where you can go have a look at them and see, just follow their story basically, and give them as much support as you can. So to talk about this week's episode, I share my chat with Sarah Louise, who talks me through her one pregnancy and the birth of her little girl. Sarah Louise's story is very different to any other story that I've ever shared on the podcast. So she talks about going through a relationship breakup throughout her pregnancy. So she was a couple of weeks pregnant. She was with her partner for over 10 years, and she was a couple of weeks pregnant when he decided that the relationship wasn't for him anymore. She shares the various stages she went through of coping with the breakup, of going to appointments alone during COVID, being diagnosed with gestational diabetes, and the incredible support she received throughout her labour and the birth of her little girl. She was induced, and she says she has such fond memories of the people that supported her, including her ex-partner who was there at the birth and who was a great support. She also goes into life after dealing with a breakup and having a newborn baby, and she does want to highlight, I suppose, the reason why she wanted to tell her story is to give those who are single parents who have just recently broken up with a partner and who have a new baby, or who are in a similar position that Sarah Louise was in, going through a breakup throughout the pregnancy. She is now in a long-term relationship, and herself and her ex-partner co-parent really well. So we had a chat after our conversation, and she just told me that she's actually in a really good place. So enjoy this week's episode. Thank you, Sarah Louise, for sharing as much as you did. I really appreciate it. And I have tagged Sarah Louise in the show notes. If you want to get in touch, she's more than happy to chat. And just a little warning, I do drop an F-bomb in there in the middle of the episode, just if you have little ears around, just to be cautious of it. Sarah Louise, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. Delighted to sit down and have this chat.
Thank you so much for having me.
Not at all. Do you want to just start by giving us a little introduction to you and your family, and then we'll get stuck into your story?
So my name is Sarah Louise. I'm from Dundalk in County Louth, and I have one baby, a little girl called Kaylee. She's 2 and 4 months. And that's my family.
So tell us about, I suppose, conception and discovering that you were pregnant.
So I had been in a relationship for like 10 years and he went overseas. He's in the Irish Army, and I was out one night and I was like, the next morning I was really, really sick. And I was like, oh, this is really strange. So I was like, there's no way I could be pregnant. And went on about my business. I went into work on the Monday. The sickness continued. And I rang my sister, my eldest sister, Julie, and I told her. And she was like, are you late? Like, I was like, no, it's not due till Wednesday, but I'm so sick. So she was like, sure, just do a wee test and see. I went back to work. I casually done it in work because I couldn't wait. Mm-hmm. I was like, and just like bing, the lines come up like, and I was like, oh my goodness. And I had tried to ring my partner at the time, so excited to finally like share this good news. And yeah, obviously he didn't answer, he was working. So I phoned my sister back, and then I phoned my dad. I said, don't tell anybody yet, because obviously I haven't spoke to Kaylee's dad about it. And he phoned me that night then, and he said, well, like, what's wrong? And I obviously like told him, and he was like, what? No way, like, I can't believe this. And yeah, the excitement lasted for about a whole 2 weeks. And then he was like, yeah, I don't think I love you anymore, we're finishing. I was like, what the hell? And yeah, it was absolutely like crazy. So we decided then, he was overseas, so it was so hard, like, you know, trying to communicate, and like emotions were high. And this was then November. So I found out in November, and then he said, look, I think I'm going to come home for Christmas. I'm going to ask them to support me through this and get home for Christmas. So he came home for Christmas, and we had like a counselling session set up then straight away. And we went to the counselling, and like he basically said, like, there is always hope. Like, you know, if you want to make it work, this can work. So we did our first session, and then we did like a single one each. Like, this was all within like around Christmas, and like he only had 10 days to be at home, and then he had to go back. So he went back then, and in the February then, like, things obviously, he was like, look, I'm going to cut my trip short, I'm going to come home, like, it's not fair on you having to deal with all this. And I said, right, okay. So I have to say his work was absolutely amazing with supporting the both of us and getting him home. Because usually when you go over there for 6 months, you can't get home early, you know. So I'm trying to think. He came home then in February, and we went to a different counsellor this time around. The first counsellor, we didn't kind of have a bond to it. So we went to the counselling, and she seen us together, and then both seen us separately. And then she seen us together again. And then she seen Kelly's dad separately again. So then he come home and he said, look, I need to chat with you. And he said, I don't know how to do this like face to face. I don't have the words, but I find that like if I communicate through a paper and pen, that like it can work better for me. So I was like, look, you do what you have to do. So he gave me this letter, and in this letter, like, I won't go into detail, but basically like he'd been having these feelings for a long time, and obviously he didn't want to bring this baby into like a negative environment, and like he didn't see any way past this. So we then both, this was like, yeah, just before COVID, like, so we both lived together and in Kildare. So I lived, my family, his family are all from Dundalk. So like we were both just us, and we both then kind of made the decision, like, will we stay? Like, it's going to cause so much drama and stress between our families. Like, we've been with each other from children, like secondary school. So we made the decision then that we were going to stay living together while doing counselling, just I suppose, to have like a mediator to try and sort out things, because obviously I was so upset. And
so you had no support then in Kildare?
No, like, not really. Like, I had friends that I had made, like my work colleagues, I suppose. Like, I didn't obviously tell anybody, like, but I told one of my best friends. So like, she was kind of my main support. Like, any, like, I, we all also, we had mutual friends, like a couple that were mutual friends, and we both told them for support, like, because obviously just to have somebody to be like, oh my god, what am I going to do, like. So our mutual friends, like his fiance, kind of said to me, like, I think you should tell somebody in your family, like, you know, like, you have a long way to go. And like, she was like, I need you, like, she was telling me to move out, like, this is not good for you, like, during pregnancy, like, you know, it's not an environment that you want to be pregnant in. So my elder sister, my mum's passed away, so I phoned my elder sister and I told her, and she was like, look, she was like, I don't mean to be like unrealistic, but men, sometimes it's fright or flight. And she said, like, maybe this is just him completely panicking, like, I can't play the PlayStation for 10 hours at night now, I can't go out with the lads on a weekend away, you know, like. She was like, just give it time, like, she said, do the counselling, see how yous get on, and like, if it's still like no, then we'll try and, you know, we'll put actions into our plan. So she kind of just touched base with me every day, like, and then he went then on holidays with the boys over to Dubai for a week. And I think then in that week, I kind of knew, like, this is not, like, it's never going to work, like. So cool. He was going traveling to, like, part of Vietnam for 2 weeks as well, but then COVID hit, so his holiday was cut short. So he come home, and then obviously we were going, counseling stopped and everything, so we were doing it through Zoom. And to be honest, looking back now, we should have never agreed to live together, because he obviously was at that stage of the breakup where I suppose he didn't have emotions to me anymore, and he probably didn't for a long time, where I was still very much emotionally involved. And then I was pregnant, so the hormones on top of all that. So then I got gestational diabetes, and we ended, anyway, to cut a long story short, we just decided to live together and we told nobody. And then, yeah, we kind of try to work through it as much as possible. I don't want to give too much without going into
it. Of course, yeah. So, like, so when you had appointments, were you going to appointments alone, or was he supporting you in appointments?
No, so sure, with COVID, you weren't allowed. So my first 12-week appointment, friend.
It would have been, like, yeah, around 12 weeks. Yes. Like, yeah.
So that was January the 25th. I went for my scan to make sure the baby was okay and all. And then, sure, COVID hit. So I was doing them all on my own, like.
And did you feel, how connected to your pregnancy did you feel, or did you feel distracted?
Yeah, so it was very, it was very hard, because obviously this baby was very wanted, and I couldn't wait to be a mom. I think in my whole way through my pregnancy, I didn't allow myself to get worked up probably as much as I should have. I always kept telling myself, like, you know, you have your baby now, like, you have to be in a positive mind frame for this baby. So I was very connected, and I always knew that I was going to be okay because I had the baby, which, yeah, like, so I was very much, like, at nighttime, like, I would sing to the baby, like, I had my routine, and, you know, like, I was like, no, I have to build with this baby now, because I didn't know what it was going to be like once the baby was born, you know.
And did you do any classes to kind of...
Yeah. So he done them too now. He done them with me. So we done, I can't remember. It was all through Zoom. It was like preparing for baby to come. So, like, you know, learn how to make the bottles, the nappies, you know, like that beginners. I can't remember who I done it with now at the time, but it was free. And it was for 3 hours on a Saturday. So we done that through Zoom. And then I also done like a breastfeeding one, because in my head I was like, I'm breastfeeding. And what else did we do? that was kind of it. Like, if there was anything, like, regarding the baby, we'd sit and, like, we'd talk about, or, like, the likes of, like, the pram and, like, all them big things. Like, we'd, he was, like, quite, he's a very laid-back guy anyway, so he was like, no, like, just, there was one pram, and he was like, no way. But other than that, like, you know, like, we did have, like, decisions, and, like, he was involved in such, with such, like, that for the pregnancy.
That must have been so conflicting, because I was going to ask you, how did you do that together when you knew, like, how?
I don't know, because I think in my head, we were still living together. So,
yeah,
in my head, I probably thought, like, oh no, like, this is a stage, we're going to get back.
Mm.
So it kind of made it easier for me. I don't think I accepted the breakup until the baby was born. I think, like, in my head, I was like, no, it will be fine. Like, everything's going to be okay. And, like, I remember, like, even on, like, the days where I was like, this is shit show. But, like, just being like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And just kept telling myself, like, it was going to be okay.
Jesus, that is, that's, it's such a, excuse my French, a head fuck. Like it's that's incredibly tough. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was very tough.
So, throughout your pregnancy, as you started to have your scans and to see baby, did you feel a sense of excitement that you're going to? Yeah.
Yeah, like, it was, like, the most exciting thing, like, I ever, like, from the first flutter to the first kick to the kicks in the ribs at night time. Mm. Like, I just, like, I remember, I was about 18 weeks and my scan wasn't until 22 weeks. So I remember being like, I was so convinced I was having a boy. Like, I even bought, like, a wee boy's outfit. Like, I was, like, really, really convinced, like, this is a little boy. And I remember being like, mommy's boy, you know, like, when I was speaking to my bump at night time or, and, I was getting really anxious because I was like, I'm not feeling anything. Should I be feeling, like, at this stage? You know, you hear, you're listening to everyone's stories. And I was like, I think, like, at 21 weeks then, I was getting really anxious. And I remember ringing the hospital and being like, look, I'm really anxious. And she was like, no, come on up. Like, if you're anxious and you're not feeling anything, even though that's quite normal, she was like, come up. Like, they were so, the coom was absolutely amazing. Like, and I went up on my own. I drove through COVID, through the checkpoints on the motorway and going up. And she was like, your baby's fine. It's just that the placenta is at the front. So, like, it will be harder for you to feel the baby's kicks.
Okay.
And she asked me, do you want to know what you're having? And I said, no, I'll wait. So my 22-week scan came, and myself and Kaylee's dad, we drove over, he was with me, and he was like, I said, like, will I find out? I said, what about getting it on a piece of paper? So we got it on a piece of paper and we went back to the house, and I remember just looking at his face and that cheeky grin. I knew it was a girl. I just knew. And I remember going like, oh, I can't believe this, like, and I remember, like, absolutely sobbing uncontrollably, going like, I'm getting my little girl, like. And I remember ringing my family and they're all like, you sound so disappointed. I was like, no, I just am shocked that, like, it's this little girl. And I remember, like, just knowing then, like, you know what, like, we have each other. And I remember just being told it was a little girl. And I was like, my mom sent me this little girl. This is my best friend now, and we're going to get through it. And I think when I found out that I was having a little girl, like, in my head, I was like, we're going to be okay. And we were, and we are okay. And looking back now, you know, he done us a favour and we're so much happier. Like,
because I think it came into my head that this, like, your little girl, and seeing that it was a little girl, was like a gift from your mom, as in, like, you're going to be okay. But also, when you saw those scans and you saw her, like, did you feel that it's going to be us too? Like, we're going to be okay. Like, the deeper connection.
Yeah, that's the way I would describe it, that connection. Mm. And I think, you know, he was very much like, he didn't want to give me false hope. So, like, if I'd go into him at night, we slept in separate rooms. Mm. So if I'd go in and be like, oh my God, the baby's kicking, he'd be like, huh. And sometimes he would feel, sometimes he'd be like, oh, no, it's okay. Like, you know, but I think looking back now, he didn't want to, because he didn't want to give me false hope of, like, if I give her this, of what she's looking for, is she going to think that there's hope? So I remember, like, always telling myself, like, she knows, like, it's me that's feeling her, it's me that's talking to her. You know, like, I think I connected with her then in a, like, a much deeper connection.
So do you want to talk us through those last few weeks?
Yeah, it was. So I had Kaylee on the 1st of August. I had gestational diabetes. So I remember I wasn't told until like 32 weeks. And it was only like 0.1 on the scale. I was over, and I on only one test. I was like, are you sure I've gestational diabetes? Like, the thoughts of trying to do all these fingerprints.
Yeah.
Pricks. And she, I remember the midwife being like, you're having a baby, get used to these needles, like, you know, like laughing it off. And I was like, I can't. Anyway, they were so supportive. I went up, and because it was through COVID, it was all done through the phone. So you'd go up one day, and like, she literally showed me how to prick myself, and then you were sent home, like, none of the classes. And I remember just telling myself, like, I've been through so much mentally, I really don't want to have to inject myself physically. So I just really stuck to the diet, and I was so strict, and it was diet control then for the rest. So I think then, like, at maybe 34 weeks, I went back to work. Then things started opening back up. So we were one of the first crèches to open back up. I think that was in June, the end of June. And I worked then 2 weeks, and I took then, I went on my maternity leave, and I remember everybody saying to me, oh my goodness, I've never seen such a big bump. My whole entire life, I was humongous. And I'm like, oh, I know. And they're telling me, like, then my 38 week scan, I said to the midwife, I said, look, I'm actually really anxious. Like, I said, I'm 38 weeks. I said, I don't want to be induced. I said, I'm very, like, I want to try and go natural. And I said, but I think this baby's very big. I said, I feel like she's no more room, like, left, I said, and I physically feel like I can't grow anymore. And she said, look, I'm going to send you for a growth scan again. And I was like, right, okay. So the first growth scan, they said the baby was approximately 5 pounds. And then on my 38 week scan, they said the baby was about 5.5 pounds. So they said, look, your baby's fine, like, this is just an average, but, like, it's not a big baby, you've nothing to worry about. I remember just, like, being so tired and being so big and just barely able to walk. Like, I was like, I'm so fed up now, I want this baby here. And so what happened then? Oh yeah, so I asked for a sweep on my 38 week, and they gave it to me. They said that I was in favour for it. I was drinking raspberry leaf tea like there was no tomorrow.
Eating dates.
I never touched the dates. I was like,
no, either. They're rotten.
I don't care. I'll drink the tea, but I'm not touching the dates. And I got a sweep. And we went to, like, walking that night. Like, she said to me, like, your cervix is open and all, like, this is very favorable, like, I can't give you, you know, false hope. But I was like, okay. 39 weeks came back up to the comb, and I was like, where is this baby? Like, I said, I was so upset then. I was like, I'm very hormonal, I want this baby to be here now. Like, I said, I'm so sore and I'm not sleeping, you know, damn final stages. Yeah. Where you're just like, and I said, I want another sweep. So I had another sweep, and we went to Malahide Castle and Gardens, and we walked and we walked, and I got my show in Malahide Gardens. So Kaylee's dad then said, sure, come on, we go to Hoth. And I was like, oh, lovely, we get ice cream. He took me up the mountain. Oh. And all I kept having was visions of an air ambulance coming to collect me because I went into labour. No, still no sign of this baby coming. And then at 40 weeks, I said, no, you just have to do something now. Like, she was moving, she'd no room. So my consultant then was like, look, we're going to keep you in and we're going to start you in the morning. But when she checked me, I was like 1 centimeter. So I only had to get induced then by the oxytocin drip.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Oh, yeah.
And were you at that stage, were you thinking about what happened, like, in that moment when you gave birth, do you know, between you and Kaylee's dad?
No.
Were you anxious about that?
I think looking back now, I would have never let him in the room if I had been strong mentally. I think if I had a break in that connection of still loving him, I would have been mentally stronger to be like, no, you don't deserve to be here after what you put me through. But he came in, and I have to say, he was incredible. Although he wasn't there for me emotionally, he was mentally and physically there, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, like, where you wanted that kiss, you know, towards the end, but like when things became really tough, you know, towards the end of labour, he was amazing. Like, he was very, very good. Like, with that, and like, you know, when they're right, let's go, last push, come on, like, he was kneel deep in the middle of it, you can do this, look at me, like, let's go, she's nearly here. And I think in that stage I didn't care about him, which sounds so bad, but I just wanted my baby to be safe and me to be safe.
I think
like at that stage then I knew there's never going to be me and you, or we're not getting back. So when we went in to have Bert, so I was kept in then a 40 weeks. They didn't let me home then because the doctor, my consultant, wasn't happy with, like, Kaylee on the scan.
Okay.
So he went home, like, he was outside the hospital waiting on me. And he took up my bags and everything like that. And then this year, it was through COVID, so there was no visitors allowed. Like, so, like, I remember him texting me, like, how are you? Like, he got up at 6 o'clock that morning. He was outside the hospital from 7 o'clock just in case I was called. Like, so he was very good with that type of it. Like, you know, he didn't want me to go through one thing on my own. Like, so... Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, now looking back at it, although I probably wouldn't have had a minute, I wouldn't have changed it. I'm glad that he got to see his daughter born too.
Do you want to talk us through your induction?
Yes, because I think for me, them words sent shivers down my spine. I was like, I'm so scared. And I remember telling my consultant, like, I'm so scared. You hear horror stories. But like, I want anybody that is listening to this and is going to go through an induction, like, I had such a positive experience. It was so nice. So obviously I only needed the drip and my waters broke. So the midwives all that day were checking on me. They were like, you're next on the list. And then sure, there'd be an emergency. And I wouldn't be next on the list. So I went up to the labour ward at about 4:30 that day. And I met my midwife, Rachel, and who was incredible. And she was like, we talked about my birth preferences. And I said, look, I don't want an epidural. I'm petrified of needles. I want to do this naturally. I had like my podcast. I wanted to listen to my calming music. And she was like, that's okay. But she said, I just want you to be openly minded that an induction is not the same as a natural birth. So if things get tough or, you know, you can't get an epidural. And I was like, okay. So she got me all set up and got like the needle and all my drip sorted. And then my consultant come in, Sarah Murphy, who was absolutely like, she wasn't even my consultant through my pregnancy, but she was consultant on the day and she was amazing. Like, and she broke my waters and went on the drip. And I remember sitting there talking away. And next thing, this pain out of nowhere came. I was like, oh my God, what is that? And she was like, that's a contraction, Sarah Louise. I was like, oh my God. God, I was like, okay, maybe I will get epidural. And that was the first contraction. So we started timing them then, and my contractions came really, really fast. So they were coming for 45 seconds and then they were going away for 15 seconds. So like, they literally came rapid and
getting no break.
No break at all. And I remember the gas and air taking that. And it's so funny. I remember, like, because with the gas and air, I was like, oh, I felt sick then because I was like hoofing it into me. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, no, like, I actually need something stronger now. Like, I'm not even getting a breather. And I remember the sweat was pouring down. I was like, get a fan, get me water spray. Like, I was like, get me something. And then, so this went on for about an hour. And I said, will you check me? Like, I feel like I need to push. And she was like, I'm not checking you, Sarah Louise. She said, you're going through enough without me having the broken prad. She said, you're not. She said, I'm looking at, like, she looked and everything, but she said, no. And she said, Sarah Louise, they're coming very fast. Like, she said, would you think about getting the epidural? And I was like, I'm really, really scared. And she said, you've nothing to be scared of. I'll be with you every step of the way. She said, your partner, obviously the hospital didn't know that we were split up. Mm-hmm. It'll be with you every step of the way. And I was like, okay, I want the epidural. And I said, if it's going to make it that I can enjoy this, because I said, I can't even talk. Like, and so come in with the doc. I was waiting. She said to me, actually, the doctor's on the ward. If you want this epidural, this is your chance now, because we might get him up. And I was like, right, okay. So he came in and he started it. And when he was starting to put the epidural in, I was like, I need to push. So he was like looking at my midwife as if to say, like, what do you mean? Like, did you check her? And she said, she's not needing to push. I'd say it's just the contractions. So he had to stop every time I got a contraction putting an epidural in until my contraction passed. But because they were coming so fast, sure, it took him forever to get this epidural in.
And so did you just have that permanent feeling of bearing down, like, just so deep? And
so deep. So once the epidural was finally put in, then sure, the midwives were starting to change shift. And she said, Sarah Louise, I'm going to check you before I leave, because if you're ready, she said, I'm going to stay until the baby's born. And she said, no, she said, you're 9 centimeters.
Not too far off.
Yeah.
So you must have been working really hard then, but even while you were getting the epidural.
Yeah. She was like, this is brilliant. She said, you're flying it now. Look, you're nearly at the end. And then I stayed. So a new midwife came in and I can't remember the name. And I always be like, I just didn't have that bond with her the way I had the bond with my first midwife. And she was a young midwife and everything. And I was like, she was great now in that, like, she got the peanut ball and she had put that between your legs. And you know, I want you now to really focus on every contraction. And so 10 centimeters came. So they stopped the oxytocin drip then. And she calmed down the epidural. And I was like, so she said, look, I'm going to give you 45 minutes. That has been horrendous, like a couple of hours for you. Like, it's been nonstop. And I said, right, okay. So 45 minutes came and like I wasn't getting any then urges to push or anything. So.
Sorry, Sarah Louise, did you have a reprieve? So did you get time to just have a rest and have a sleep or anything? You did? Okay. Yeah.
She gave me 45 minutes. She said, look, I'll give you 45 minutes just to see how things go. And then. So 45 minutes came and said, now, Sarah Louise, this is the most important part because you're 10 centimeters. We need to get this baby. And like she showed me like how to push like deep in, you know, heels to the bed. And I done that. And every time she'd say, oh, my God, I can see baby's head. Mm-hmm. And then after the contraction, I had no more urge to push. So this went on for about like 45 minutes. And I was like, I was getting really tired then at this stage. And she said, look, I'm going to get the head midwife just to come in and have a look. And so they said, did you scan her? And she was like, no. And she said, just scan her there and see where the baby is. Because every time she's contraction, we can see the baby's head. Like, so we know, sorry.
Okay.
So we know the baby's on the way. Like, so, and she was like, your heartbeat's perfect. The baby's heartbeat's perfect. So we've nothing to worry about. Like, and they kept reassuring me, like, the baby's okay, you're okay. So they scanned me and they pressed a button basically and the room kind of started filling up and I was like, oh my goodness, what is going on here? And she said to me, Sarah Louise, the baby's stuck because her shoulder is stuck.
Okay.
So she was like, look, she said, you've worked so hard. And I said, they're not using forceps or anything on me. I said, I don't want that. I told him I did not want that. And she said, look, the consultant came in and said, you told me this yesterday when I admitted you, you didn't want this. And I said, no. And she said, look, what we can do is we can try and manually remove it and we can go. And I said, well, that's what we're going to do. So they manually like did what they had to do. And I said, she started coming over with the forceps then. She said, look, we just need to be prepared because this is when the baby's heart rate might drop and we have to, you know, act fast. And like this took me through every single like move they made, so I felt like I was still very much in control. And once like she took her hand out, like I was like, I need to push, and like the baby was there in two pushes.
Oh wow.
So it was like very fast in the end, like, but it was so like, I remember like feeling so empowered, like I can do this, like especially them final two pushes where, you know, you can really feel everything. Like, and she came then and she was 9'3". So it wasn't a small baby after all.
No, gorgeous, healthy girl. Yeah.
Big. I remember like all the doctors being like, oh my goodness, what a big baby. Like she was so long. She was like a monster.
And did she come up onto your chest?
Yeah, she came straight up onto my chest, but they had to stitch me. And I remember being like, no, I can't. I couldn't. So I said, look, will you let dad hold the baby? And let, because I remember being to him like, look, like towards the end, I was like, it's so important that you make this bond with this baby now, because I suppose I was conscious that he didn't make the bond when I was pregnant, where I was very much attached to Kaylee, like, and I knew like her moves, like if she didn't kick properly during the day, I was like, there's something wrong, you know. I knew where he didn't have that, so he done skin to skin then, and then like they worked and had to do what they had to do on me then, and I was breastfeeding then, so they said, look, she needs fed now, we're finished with you. And they got me up and kind of got me cleaned, and give me kind of a wee bed wash or whatever, and then I started breastfeeding.
And how did it, do you remember her first latch?
Yeah. Yeah, it was so sore. I remember being like, oh my goodness. And like, she had these, she's massive lips, like, and I remember like these lips being like, yeah. And like, you know, that real like, yeah, deep, like, and yeah, so I fed her, and I have to be honest, I didn't really know what I was doing. And the midwife, I remember saying to me, you're so nervous. I was so nervous, and I don't know why, because like, I worked in that sector from I was 18. I have loads of nieces and nephews, but I remember thinking like, this is my baby and I need to guard her with. And I was so nervous even holding her, like, even though she was massive, she was very thin, like her limbs and her wee arms and her legs and everything were so thin. And I remember when I was breastfeeding her, like, she was so rough with her, like, just pulling her. I was like, ah, what are you doing, my baby? Like, and she was like, it's okay. So she really worked with me then for about 45 minutes trying to get that latch and trying different maneuvers, because once she latched, she was letting go for a while, and then like, say like, she was sucking for like 5-7 minutes, and then she'd stop and we'd have to relatch her. And she was like, she's not like comfortable when she's latching, she should be latching a bit more comfortably. So she was amazing, like, she really worked with me and showed me what to do. And then I had my tea and toast, and I was there for about 3 hours after my birth with the midwife, and you know, we got her dressed and fed her again. And she was like, she's a very hungry baby, like, she was like, I can tell, you know. And I was like, yeah, I was like, do we need to give her a bottle? Because I remember saying like, I don't mind giving a top up. And she was like, no way, we're not giving the top up yet, let's get this latch under control, like. And then so with COVID, they weren't allowed down to the ward. And I remember, I think that's when it really, really hit me then. So when we went down, and the midwife was like, look, I'll give you a minute, daddy, if you want to kiss mommy goodbye now, you're not going to see her till tomorrow. And the two of us just looked at each other, and obviously he didn't kiss me like he kissed Kaylee. And he said, like, he tapped me on the back and he said, I'll see you tomorrow, like. And I remember going down to the ward, and I busted out crying. And even now the midwife was like, it's okay, like, you've been through so much. And I remember then busting out and telling her, like, you know, no, like, this is what's wrong. And it just felt so good to have it in the open, you know, like, sorry. And I remember her saying to me, like, oh, look, she said, after you have a baby, your hormones are all over the place. And she was like, going back to that, I was like, do you have the support that you need? And I was like, oh yeah, no, I do. And she was like, I just don't think that's a good idea. Like, she said, I can't tell you what to do. But like, she was like, she just went through everything with me. Like, and she was like, you need to look after you now. You're number one before this baby, or, you know, before like the daddy or the baby. She said, you're number one. And she said, you're going to go through an array of emotions over the next 5-10 days, like, everything. And she said, I want you to, like, she said, I need you to have the support, like, especially with breastfeeding and everything. And I said, no, like, I said, like, he's great, like, he'll do all the cooking, which he did. Like, he was very much like, you know, you don't worry about anything. And anyway, I couldn't walk, I was that sore after giving birth. And I remember then going back to the house, and everything when Kaylee was born, and I was topping her up, because in the hospital, like, the next morning when, like, the, you know, the midwives change, and she was like, you look exhausted. And I said, I haven't slept. Like, I said, she's literally on the boob the whole night, like. And she was like, she's a very hungry baby. And I said, yeah. And she said, would you think about giving her a top up? She said, I shouldn't recommend it, but she said, you need sleep, like. And she said, the bottle might. And I said, yeah, I said, maybe so. So I remember, like, she was like, look, I'll take the baby, I'll throw a bottle, you go to sleep if there's a problem. And like, I was like, what, are they really doing this for me? Like, but they did. And I give her the bottle, and she, I remember her sleeping for like 3 hours, because when I woke up it was like 3 hours later. And then daddy come up or whatever, and I had been breastfeeding her, and I said, look, you can top her up with a bottle because I want to go for a shower. And you know, I hadn't left the bed, so I remember like that first shower and just being like, oh, this is amazing. And I came down, like, and she was asleep, and then I always then I was like, no, do you know what, I have to do this on my own. And I remember like trying then at that stage I was trying to think ahead. So then at that stage, then I was like, right, okay, I'm going to top her up with the bottle, because it means then if I want to give up the breastfeeding, then I know she's used to milk and the formula. And so they said to me that day, like, you can leave. And I was like, oh, no, I don't want to leave. And they were like, what? And I said, I'm not ready to go home yet. And she was like, you have your breastfeeding under control. And I said, but I'm in an awful lot of pain. I said, like, I can't get in and out of the bed without somebody coming to help me. Like I said, it's really, really sore. And she was like, Sarah Louise, you had a 4th degree tear. And she was like, it's going to be sore for a while, like. And she said, we'll give you pain relief and all. And I was like, no, I'm not going home. I said, I just want one more night just to make sure that I'm comfortable with the breastfeeding. And she was like, no, that's okay, you can stay. So I stayed one more night, and I remember the next morning getting her up and, you know, getting her dressed to go home. And I remember putting her into the car, and I sat in the car, and I remember busting out crying, and he's looking at me going, what the hell? Like, I mean, like, hysterically crying. And I was like, oh, I don't know, like, what if something happens? Or, and he was like, nothing's going to happen, or like, we're both here, we're going to be fine. So that was grand. And then I remember texting everybody and being like, look, I don't want any visitors with COVID. And I said, just give me a couple of days, because in my head I knew then at that stage then, like, you know, things, although like the environment wasn't toxic with the baby, like, but we were in a very toxic place. And I remember then going for my checkup, like your 2-week checkup, the public health nurse asked me to go and see the doctor because I was still very sore. And they put me on like an antibiotic. And I remember telling the GP, like, look, this is what's going on. I can't stop crying when the baby's crying. Like, I was like, I don't have like a bond with the baby. And I remember just saying that. And she was like, that's okay, that will come. And, you know, you have to build this relationship. And I was like, no, like, this is what's going on at home. And she was like, oh my goodness, you need to get out of that environment, like, straight away. She was like, oh my goodness, does anybody know, like, who's supporting you through all this and all? Like, my GP was absolutely incredible. Like, she was like, no way. She was like, you need to tell your parents, and you need everybody to support you. And I was like, but what about him? And she was like, it's not about him, he never had a baby, you had a baby. And she was like, no, absolutely not. So she was like, I never noticed, you should have told me before this, I could have you, you know, like, a bit more mentally prepared. And so I remember then, just, I suppose at that stage then, like, I was finding things of his personal life that was hurting me. And he come home from work and he was like, that's it, like, I can't do this anymore, we're telling our parents. So we drove to the dock, and I remember, like, telling, we told his parents first, and everybody was just so heartbroken, like, what do you mean, you just had a baby, like, this is, you know. But I don't think they realized that it had been going on from the very start, you know. So I remember being like, how am I going to tell my dad? Like, my dad's very old school, like, he's an older, and, like, you know, you just have, what do you mean, like. And I remember, like, him just being like, at the time, we told everybody it was a mutual decision. And I think it was just so that there would be no arguments. Like, we have to be part of each other's life for the next 18 years. Like, I didn't want families falling out. So once we told our families, I felt like a world was lifted off our shoulders. You know, we'd so much support. And my family, his family, like, both families were incredible with both of us, like, you know. And I remember then he went away with the lads, and I was still living up in, like, the house at the time, and he went away with the lads, and I think that was the final straw for me. I remember being like, I'm in the house on my own with newborn baby, he's out living his life with the lads. And I think that was a reality check, like, I'm not bonding with this baby, although this is all we ever wanted. And I think like he probably bonded with the baby at that stage a lot more than I did, because I think I was, everything that I tried to hide from the baby in pregnancy come out. I could, I suppose, grieve for this relationship. Mm-hmm. And I remember when he come home, I said, I'm done. I told my family. And at that stage, then my sister, I didn't want to live with my dad because my dad was old. I didn't want him to having to deal with a newborn baby, you know. And although he offered the house, like Kaylee's dad's parents offered the house to me, like, I knew that wouldn't have been a good idea either, because I still wasn't getting away and not dealing with the fact that this relationship had now broke down. So I moved in with my sister, and like they got everything ready for me. And I remember the final day, and I'm being like, so we had a family photo shoot, like this, like in my head, like I don't know what I was thinking, like, but like we done a pregnancy photo shoot together as a couple, like in my head, I like looking back now, you know. And we done a family photo shoot when the baby was a newborn. Now I'm glad, because I think when she's older, like she will be, it was for her, you know, in my head, like. And I remember on the Friday when I was moving out, the sense of relief left in my body the day I walked out of that house and I said, I will never turn back. Mm. And it was a happy and sad medium, because I knew it was over, but I knew then my new life was starting, which is bizarre, because you don't even think in that frame of mind, you're not thinking like that. But I knew I had to build this relationship with this baby, because she was all I ever wanted. And I came home to Dundalk, and the support was absolutely incredible. Like, and I think then, like, it just went from strength to strength. Although we were very toxic at the start, and there was stuff, and there was things, I'm sure we both, looking back now, were like, what the hell were we thinking? And I remember just thinking, like, how could he move on and like think of another woman, like when I can't even think of another man, or, you know, like I was so focused on what he was doing with his life. And then I was in Costa one day and I was feeding the baby, and I think then, like, for that split second, I realized like I had built that bond with the baby. And I remember looking back going, oh my God, how did you go through all that and come out the other side and be okay? And I knew then, the way Kaylee used to look at me, then I knew we built that bond. And I think I knew we were going to be okay. But I remember Kaylee getting sick all over Costa. And I knew then, not that I was over him, but I knew that chapter of my life was closed, because the fella in Costa, when he was coming then, I remember going, oh my goodness, he's beautiful looking. And I never felt like that, or I never looked like that at somebody else before, like, you know. And yeah, like I just then, well, you just really focused on, like, when I done night feeds in my sister's house, I would always do skin to skin with her, just like really trying to build that bond with her. And then I remember she was really, really sick and she had to go in the hospital. And I said, now I know that bond was there, because that fright that I got, and she just wanted her mammy, like she wouldn't settle, you know, in a car or anybody else's arms, only mine. And then I realised that, you know what, I done the right thing by leaving then. And I probably should have left a long, long time ago, but I didn't.
Wow. When you said, like, just the moment when you said that you left on that Friday, in my head, I was like, now she can be held.
Yeah.
Like, finally, like, there's nothing more. Sorry.
Sorry.
God. Nothing more than you needed. That's all. That's what you needed. You needed that so much. But I'm so glad. I'm so glad that you were in Costa that day and got to feel that. Got to feel like, hey, geez, I have this. Yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy. Like, and looking back now, like, Kaylee's 2 and 4 months. Like, I thought I would never move on, and I have moved on, and I'm so much happier, like, you know. So, like, yeah. Although it was very hard and it was emotional roller coaster, I do think that, like, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. And I think, like, no matter how bad you are in a mental place, like, you will get there. And, like, there will be happiness. You just have to fight each day, you know, and get there. And when you get there, you'll never look back. I think, like, anybody that's going through this pregnancy on their own, or, like, their marriage or their relationship is really on the rocks, like, just take each day as it comes. And, like, I promise you, it will get better. And, like, they are the best days of your life, like.
Thank you so much for being so honest. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I really hope that it helps people in my business. Because I think there is a lot of people out there.
Yeah,
I'm so glad that I done this, though. I'm glad that I done it, because I wanted to do it for months, because I had said, like, once I do this now, this is it. Like, I know I'm going to help somebody, because even when I put up the photo of me and Kaylee on your page, remember, like, our first, I remember somebody had reached out to me, like, and I was like, don't worry, you got this, you're going to be okay. Like, I remember thinking, like, oh, she has a long road, but she will get there, like, you know. Yeah, I was like, so yeah. I hope, like, by me doing this podcast, like, it would make somebody know that it's going to be okay, like.
And what I can do is, if you're comfortable, I'll tag you in the post as well, so people can reach out. I'll mention in the intro that you're as long as you're comfortable with people reaching out to you, that you're there if you need them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers. Thanks, Eloise.
Okay, take care.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and please do pass on Sarah Louise's story to someone who you know might need to hear it. I will chat to you next week with a brand new episode on Monday. And if you'd like to share your story, you're more than welcome to just get in touch over on the website, irelandsbirthstories.ie. Click on the Share Your Stories tab, fill out a few details, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible with a date for our chat. Have a good week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.